Good morning. Time to go ahead and get our class started. We are going to be spending our time not only this morning, but all week, if the Lord permits us to, until Wednesday evening when the last lesson is scheduled, talking about our wedding vows and what those vows mean and why they're written the way that they are. And I understand not everybody's vows are exactly the same, and it seems that more and more as I perform weddings these days that many couples break away from traditional vows and write their own vows. Some of them are very good and helpful. Some of them, I strongly encourage them, if they want me to do the wedding, to add a couple phrases to them because they seem to be missing some things that I think are important to include in the nature of our wedding vows. I want you to turn to Genesis chapter 2 because I think the concept of our wedding vows are based on the principles that are established, and we're going to look at some of these principles that are established in Genesis chapter 2 in regards to marriage. I read a set of vows, not in a wedding I was going to do, but a set of vows, I don't know, I guess 3 or 4 years ago, that included the phrase, as long as you both shall love. I thought that's kind of odd. As a matter of fact, that's beyond odd. That's just wrong, based on our culture's view of love. So they had substituted love for live. They weren't going to make the vows intended to be lifetime. But we're going to, Lord willing, finish up the vows section specifically tomorrow night when we talk about the phrase, as long as you both shall live or till death do us part, and the significance of that. But that concept is inherent, I think, in the vows themselves and in the idea of God establishing the very function of marriage initially. And so in Genesis chapter 2, after Adam saw Eve, after God had created her, and he's, as you can expect, he's obviously highly impressed, and sees this future wife of his and says, this is bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. In verse 33, she shall be called woman because she was taken out of a man. Therefore, and so there's one of those connecting clauses. That's why I started with verse 23. You can't start a thought process with therefore. The idea is it's connecting to something. He's saying because of the way woman was created, that she was taken, bone of his bones, flesh of his flesh, the whole method of creating the woman from the man, he says, therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother. And the New King James says, and be joined to his wife. The Old King James used to say, cleave to his wife, and we'll talk about that in the next session. Shall leave his father and mother, and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. I read that in almost every wedding that I conduct. Hopefully it makes the impression that you hope that it makes on the couple that's getting married, but on others that are listening as well. I did get to do a wedding in Kansas City not too long back for really good friends of ours, that as I was doing that, and I read verse 25, and they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. There was a boy sitting about where Candy is here with his parents. He was about 5 or 6. And he leaned over toward his mom, and he goes, he's dead naked. A little disruptive, especially because I knew the phrase showed up again in the ceremony in about another 5 minutes, to which he was equally shocked the second time that I said it. But there's significance in all the things that he says here in regards to this idea. And so we're going to start with the concept of just the being married to begin with. And the vows, I don't know if yours included something of this sort, but it normally has something that at least alludes to this. When I was asked in our wedding ceremony, do I take Judy to be my lawfully wedded wife? That was the way they phrased it, at least back in the 70s. That gets phrased a little differently now, it seems like. But the concept is still there. Lawfully wedded wife. I remember from a quote that we've used in other marriage lessons, Socrates said, by all means, marry. If you get a good wife, you'll become happy. If you get a bad one, you'll become a philosopher. So I'm saying that probably speaks volumes of his opinion. But is that what it boils down to? I mean, the concept of, did I get the right wife? We'll talk about that, if the Lord permits, in the very next session. Is that it? Did I get a good wife? And is that what I'm striving to do? Or is there more to it than just the way we have altered that particular idea and concept? Give me a phrase that you hear maybe today that would indicate people think there is somebody out there that is the right person for them. A soulmate. People say, I'm looking for my soulmate, as if there's one out there. There's one person that I might be able to find that is different than every other person. I think God's going to help us to understand, both through illustration in the scriptures of the way some marriages came about, and also through the things that He teaches, that that's not the issue. I'm not saying, therefore, you should just marry the first person that you meet. There are those that are going to be more compatible to you, but and that should be based on spirituality, obviously, more than anything else. But it's not a matter of finding a single soulmate that is out there. So if I were to ask you to define this, lawfully wedded, that's what was said in your wedding or something similar to that, how would you define that? What would you say that means? You're lawfully wedded, because that's what I said. I was asked absolutely specifically that question. Do I take Judy to be my lawfully wedded wife? What was I even agreeing to? What does that mean?
In accordance with the laws of the state.
Absolutely. There's one of the first things that comes to mind. It's in accordance with the law of the state. The idea of lawfully carries that idea. It is established, sanctioned, or recognized by law. That's the first part. That I am agreeing that there is some kind of legal binding that exists. That happens within the state. They have laws regarding that. Now, the state does not define who is bound and who is not bound, and we understand that, because the state will grant dissolution of marriages that have no right in the eyes of God to be dissolved, and will allow people to marry who have no right to marry. So the state doesn't define that, but we do understand that there are legal implications associated with whatever state you are in, whatever jurisdiction you are in, to determine you're married. But it isn't only the state, is it? Adam is saying, for this reason, have you ever wondered why Adam said, you shall leave your father and mother? How much trouble do you think he had with that? No trouble at all. Adam had no mother-in-law. I'm just saying. There's not an issue of leaving family for him. And yet, this was such a critical principle to the idea of marriage. What is happening here is that Adam is setting forth a principle that will apply to everybody henceforth. And so he's stating it, even though there's no direct application to him. Marriage will always be a matter of people leaving something and coming to something, and this union being formed. And that's what he's going to talk about. So what does it mean to be married? The idea is just joined. If you look up a definition, it just says joined in matrimony. Yes.
If Moses was the author of Genesis, he's speaking that verse to his people.
Yes, Moses is speaking the verse to his people. Adam's the one that made the statement. And it's interesting. Go back and look at Moses because when he gave the law to the people, you realize they didn't even understand some of these stories. So God is giving him what happened on these occasions to go back and explain all that to the people so that they can see. So Moses is the one who is recording, but Adam is the one who said, because it says, and Adam said, for this reason. And so you've got Adam speaking, Moses recording for the people, because it's going to be an application that goes throughout all generations. But it's just the idea of a married couple, a married man, as you look it up. I don't know why it said, the definition I looked up said, joined in matrimony, a married man, a married couple. It didn't say a married woman, but obviously the application would be the same. Somebody that is whatever married represents together. So I want you, if you would, to look with me at a couple of things that are absolutely key in this concept, because we've changed as a culture. If I were to say our culture used to operate on the principle of your word is your what? Your bond. We understand that phrase, don't we? How many of you would say I feel perfectly safe with that same concept today? Guy comes to your house and says, hey, if you'll give me $1,000, I'll fix that driveway for you. How many of us are going to say, no problem, I'll give you $1,000? And trust him to come back and do that. Our word as a culture is no longer our bond, is it? It should be for Christians. God says that. It should always be. If I tell somebody I'm going to do something, I should always do it, God says. But we know our culture is not that way. It used to be your word is your bond. But if I were to say, so fill in the blank, contracts are made to be broken. That's a standard phrase, is it not? Contracts are made to be broken. That's the concept of the culture we live in. Would you agree with that? That's the culture we're living in. Contracts are made to be broken. And so what the problem is if we get the wrong view of marriage, because our society will tell you that marriage is a contractual agreement. That's even excluding the idea of a prenup kind of contract. I'm saying just marriage in general. They will say that it is a contract. That's the way that the state views that. That's why there are certain laws regarding dissolution. That's why a husband and a wife have to both sign papers that they are getting married in the state of Texas and the state of Missouri. I'm assuming the same is the case in the state of Alabama. You sign paperwork. Why? Because there is a contractual agreement. But the problem with that is our culture also understands about marriage. That contract is made to be broken. Is that not true? Would you say our culture, or these days, not even to be entered into? A recent poll I was reading said 44% of kids between the age of 18 and 24, 44% said marriage is irrelevant. Just let that sink in. Not even that it's not just binding. They're saying, you know what, we don't even need marriage as a concept any longer. 44% of those that were polled. But our society breaks marriage as if it means nothing. Would you agree with that? So much so that every state, I think now, all 50 states, have what they call no-fault divorce. When I was younger, you had to show cause to get divorced. It didn't always have to be a biblical cause, but you had to show cause. Every state will now allow a marriage to be dissolved just because somebody wants to dissolve it. That's all it requires. No fault is intended. You can just say, don't want to be married to this person any longer. And so it's a contract that is made to be broken. And so there are a couple of demands that go with this when we think of this idea of being made to be broken. Marriage has to be viewed in a covenant format. What's the difference between a covenant and a contract to you?
Contract protects you from somebody.
Oh, boy, there's a good way of putting it. That's one application of that, I think. A contract protects you from somebody. When the guy comes to fix your driveway and he's going to charge you $1,000, you sign a contract with him and he signs a contract with you because both of you want protection from the other. Would you agree with that? That's the concept. If he does the work, he wants proof that you signed this so that he can get his $1,000. If he doesn't do the work, you want proof so that you can get your $1,000 back or don't have to pay him the $1,000. We want proof. Covenant is different than that. Other ideas, differences between covenants and contracts.
In a contract, typically I'm expecting something in return, whereas in a covenant, normally our idea is I have simply stated this is what I am doing. Not necessarily anything.
Absolutely. And that is a major key when we think of marriage. Contracts are agreements of some form. They involve both parties agreeing to something. Covenants do not. There may be mutual covenants made. I want you to turn to Genesis chapter 15. There may be mutual covenants made, but covenants do not require agreement from one to the other. A covenant is a promise of one person to another person. Now, in Genesis chapter 15, incredible description. This is God dealing with Abram. And as he's dealing with Abram, he's going to make a covenant with Abram. And so what he tells him, because he's told him, I'm going to give you this land. That's what he tells him in the beginning of chapter 15. He says, you know, don't be afraid, I'm your shield. And Abram says, what will you give me since I go childless? And he describes to him what he's going to give to him by way of offspring and land and all the things he's going to do. And so Abram says down in verse 8, he says, and he said, Lord God, how shall I know that I'll inherit it? Okay, here's what you're telling me. Now, obviously that should be sufficient. God said he was going to do something. That should be sufficient. But God understands that for man, sometimes we look for something that's going to reinforce that. And I think God's okay with that. Remember the story of Gideon? You ever think about, would you have had the nerve that Gideon had to say, God, how do I know I'm going to win? And God says, right, let me tell you. We're going to have a wet fleece and dry ground tomorrow morning. And so you wake up and you think, man, it's exactly like God said. And Gideon says, I'm all on board now, right? He says, God, can you give me a little more proof than that? And he says, so we're going to have a wet ground and dry fleece. And that happens. And so Gideon says, I'm all on board. And he says, no. Can you give me something else? He says, go down and you can listen to the discussion that's going on. You ever think, sometimes it isn't that we're telling God, we don't believe what you say, but God understands that sometimes we want those memorials and we want those statements that will show that. And so he says, how am I going to know this? And so God says, bring me a three-year-old heifer, three-year-old female goat, three-year-old ram, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he brought all these to him and cut them in two down the middle and placed each piece opposite the other, but he did not cut the birds in two. Somebody describe to me what you see now. Give me a visual of the scene that exists. So you got animals cut in half and laid open. So what goes along with that scene? There's blood everywhere, isn't there? There's a reason for that. The idea of a blood covenant, there was an idea for that, wasn't there? The animals were cut in half, and there was significance in that. And two people, if they were going to make a covenant agreement together, such as even like a binding marriage covenant, or two countries were making a treaty, you know, you didn't make this kind of covenant to sell a cow, but you might have to make treaties between lands, very serious decisions, very significant things, such as even marriage. But I'm saying, picture that. The two people that were involved normally in the covenant, there's only one involved here. Only God's making this covenant. Abram has nothing to do with this side of the covenant. When you get over to chapter 17, there's going to be a covenant for Abram and his people, circumcision. But this is God making a promise to Abram. And he says, here's my demonstration of how you know. And it's going to tell us that God passed through those animals. It was an oven and a torch, and, you know, it's passing through. But that's representative of God going through those animals. So I want you to envision you're getting married. I'm not recommending this for your marriage ceremony. But if you're going through a covenant marriage like this, because the people that were passing through would take off their shoes or sandals, whatever, and they would walk through between the animals. So what do you think now is happening? You got blood all over your feet. And that was intended. Because the concept of that was, when you came out on the other side, if I don't keep the covenant that I have made, may I pay with my blood as these animals have paid with their blood. That was the whole idea of a blood covenant. May I have to pay the way that they paid? So I'm not recommending that if you're not married yet. How many people in here are not married but hope to be married someday? Okay? I'm not suggesting you suggest this, especially if you're guys, you know, that you say, honey, I think this would be a great idea. Let's get some cows, some goats, let's cut them in half, walk through. I mean, that's a mess. We're just not going to accept that. But I would ask you this. If you did that, what's the chance you would ever forget your wedding ceremony? I'm thinking that's just emblazoned in your mind's eye, isn't it? That picture's not leaving. That was the intent behind a covenant, that they would understand the significance of this. And God's going to make this covenant with Abram. And it's very interesting because there's some things that go along with that are very much like a marriage ceremony. He made the covenant with Abram, but Abram's name is changed, correct? To Abraham. There was an exchange, God giving Abram the promises that he had said he would give to him later in 17, Abraham being circumcised along with all the future of those generations. There's an exchange, much the same. We exchange rings. There's a reason we exchange rings. They're tokens of the binding agreement that we have entered into. That's the nature of even exchanging rings. It isn't just so you have something attractive to put on your hand. Abram's children were going to receive the inheritance from the union of God and Abraham, were they not? It is so similar to the way a marriage is structured, this covenant between God and Abram on this occasion. So, a couple of things we need to keep in mind. The nature of why this is a covenant and why that is so important. When you think of lawfully wedded, what is it that happened? There's two things. One, accountability before God. I remember on one occasion reading an article about a guy who was getting ready to go to Washington, D.C., and this was when Franklin Roosevelt was president. He was going to go to Washington, D.C., and Roosevelt used to go to, I don't even know what church he went to, but he would go to the same church when he was in D.C., anytime he was attending. And people knew that. So this guy wrote a letter to the pastor or whatever he called himself of that particular church. And asked, said, I'm going to be in town. My wife and I are going to be in town on such and such a date. Do you know if the president will be at church that Sunday? Loved the response from the guy who responded to this man. He said, we don't know if the president will be here that day or not. But we're relatively certain God will be in attendance. I don't have any idea whether to know to agree with him or not, but I love the response. Think about the people that were at your wedding. I don't know anybody famous. Or very few people, at least, that would have any claim to fame at all. And most of that is more infamy than fame. So I didn't have anybody at my wedding that I could tell, you're never going to believe who was at my wedding. Did you read recently where, a few years back, Oprah and whoever her friend is, I don't ever watch, I don't even know who her friend is, but they attended a bunch of weddings. They took a bunch of presents with them, so I'm sure most people that she attended, she crashed the wedding, she wasn't invited. But she walked in with a large sum of valuable presents, so I'm thinking most couples were okay with that because of what they received. Or, for the younger generation, Adam Levine. And the entire group crashed some weddings. But the young couples were okay with that because they played music. He is what? Maroon 5, is that right? Somebody nod if that's correct. Okay, Maroon 5. And so Maroon 5 crashes these weddings and plays for these weddings. Those young people were thrilled about that. They didn't invite him, but they were thrilled. Because you could go tell someone, you know what? Adam Levine was at my wedding. You know who was at your wedding? God. How does Adam Levine compare to God? Or Oprah compare to God? God was at your wedding, and he's saying that this accountability, when I start a wedding, we say things like, we are gathered here today in the presence of who? What do you hear at a wedding? God and these witnesses. That's a standard phrase, isn't it, at a lot of weddings. We want people to understand that. This is an accountability. This isn't an agreement between you and your spouse. This is a promise from you to your spouse and from your spouse to you in the presence of God. There's an accountability associated with God. Look over at Deuteronomy chapter 23 for a minute. Deuteronomy 23. I'm going to ask, Jeremy, would you mind reading verses 21 to 23 there?
If you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay fulfilling it, for the Lord your God will surely require it of you, and you will be guilty of sin. But if you refrain from vowing, you will not be guilty of sin. You shall be careful to do what is past your lips, for you have voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God what you have promised with your mouth.
This is an incredible statement that God's talking about. He says, here's what happened. We made vows, right? Vows are promises. Vows are the covenant arrangement between me and my spouse. That's exactly what I was being asked up front. Do you, Mark? Now, I had the option at any point to say, no, I don't. Not sure I'd have made it out alive had I said that, but I had that option. God says, you voluntarily agreed to this. Understand that. He says, it passed from your mouth because you voluntarily made a vow. And when you voluntarily make a vow before God, he says, God takes that very seriously. He says, God will hold you to that. It is an incredible statement that is made. I took a vow that said I would love and cherish her in sickness and in health, in prosperity and adversity. That was pretty standard when I got married. And things are said in a similar fashion today. You ever hear anything like that said at a wedding? One preacher was talking about, he said the wedding was going wonderfully well. And he asked, do you take this woman for better or worse, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health? And the man said, yes, no, yes, no, no, yes. It isn't six different questions. It's one promise under all circumstances. That was the idea. I vow, better or worse. This isn't an agreement. You know what, Judy, if you will do this, then I will do this. That wasn't what it was. I was asked, do you promise? It doesn't matter what she does. I hope she fulfills all the vows that she made. I do. And she has done an incredible job of that. It's only been 40 years, so I mean, she's still got time. But she does an incredible job of fulfilling her end of that. And I'm so glad, because there's no question that that makes it easier to do what I'm supposed to do. There's no question that that helps the situation. But it doesn't change the situation. One of the assignments I give young couples when we do premarital counseling before I do the wedding is we go through Ephesians 5. So Ephesians 5 says some things like what? Husbands what? Love your wives. Other things it tells the husband. What kind of love was that? It says, like Christ loved the church, and what? He gave himself for her, right? Then it talks about nourishing and cherishing your wife and providing spiritually for your wife. All of these things that you're saying in there regarding those vows. And to the wife, it talks about her submission to her husband and her respect of her husband. Lots of vows. So I have them read through all of that. And then I tell them, I say, next class, here's what I want you to do. Bring me back a list of all the if-then clauses in Ephesians 5. Remember doing those in school? There's a conclusion. If this, then this. They're non-existent in Ephesians 5. Never am I said, Mark, if Judy does this, then you do this. It says, Mark, you love your wife like Christ loved the church. Well, what if she's not doing what she's supposed to? God's saying, what difference does that make? Remember the discussion he had with Peter? Peter says, what about this guy over here? What did Jesus say? Remember at the end, after Jesus is resurrected and they're on the beach together and he's having that discussion where he restores Peter and he tells Peter, I want you to come with me. Peter points back apparently at John and says, well, Lord, what about him? What did Jesus say? What difference does that make? I'm talking to you. Isn't that what he's telling Peter? If I want him to remain, fine. What difference is that to you? That's what God wants me to understand as a husband. As a Christian, how are you supposed to treat other people? Give me some words. Throw out some words the way we're to treat other people. With care and concern, as you'd like to be treated. Would we love our enemies? What about when they don't love us back? Jesus says, well, then, you know what? They're on their own. You do what you want to do. They're not kind to you. So Jesus says, you know what? They're not kind to you. Don't be kind to them. I'm okay with that. Is that ever our instruction? No, because we're children of God. He said, I don't care how they treat you. If you're a Christian, here's how you behave. That's what Paul is saying in Ephesians. If you're a husband, here's how you behave. If you're a wife, here's how you behave. Period. There are no ifs and thens. There's accountability before God because I made those promises. But not only accountability before God, there is integrity before men. How many of you had let me see the hand of all those that are married. And now, keep those hands up for a second. Take your hand down if you're one of the ones that only got married because somebody was pointing a shotgun at you. Oh, wait, I saw a hand go down. No, I am so sorry. So we're in the voluntary vow stage. Would you agree with that? Nobody forced me into saying what I said. But I said that. How many of you had, who have already gotten married, how many of you had a registry book at your wedding? people signed that registry book. And that exists these days mostly for what purpose? So I can send thank you notes to all the people who came to the wedding. Isn't that what it's mostly for? And especially if they left presents, then I can send them like a special. There's a box of generic thank you cards for all the attendees, and then a box of these wonderful cards for all the ones that also brought presents. That's not true. I understand that. But we have that list so we can send cards to people and thank people for coming. That's not what it was designed for. We sign it now when you're going into the wedding. But when that book first started being put out at weddings years and years and years ago, people signed it when they came out, because they were signing it to say, I witnessed what you said. That makes a difference. It wasn't a registry so you could send thank you cards. It was those who were saying, I heard you. At my wedding, I guess it wasn't my wedding, it was our wedding. Kind of like it's our children, you know, until they did something wrong. They were suddenly my possession totally at that point. Your son. But we had one of those books, and it was signed like everybody else's when people went in. But our wedding reception, I don't know how many people here know Melvin Curry. Not a very big guy, but yet can still be pretty intimidating, I can tell you that. He used to be a Gold Gloves boxer. On top of, he just could be intimidating if he wants to. I had him as an instructor. Loved him to death as an instructor and in all ways. He came up, tapped me on my shoulder at our reception. I hadn't been a Christian very long. And there were numerous people that were a little concerned for Judy and her future, I can tell you that. Matter of fact, my last trip where I got a chance to spend time with some of her family, I was telling that story, and Curtis Flatt was sitting at the table with us, and Curtis said, including J.D. That's the first I'd heard that. So I'd been married for 30-some years. He said, you know, J.D. was a little concerned. Well, I wasn't a Christian very long, and they knew that. And I'd come out of a not a mildly unchrist-like situation in life, come out of a very unchrist-like life. And so I understand they were concerned. So Melvin Curry comes up and taps me on the shoulder, and I turn around, and in about this tone of voice, he says, did you hear what you said? I mean, I'm scared to death. I'm talking to one of Judy's friends that she knew from school at the reception, and I'm replaying everything in my mind. And I'm saying, I used to use a lot of foul language. Wasn't proud of that, but that was just the way I spoke. And I'm thinking, surely I didn't curse at my own wedding. Not at the reception. And I play all that conversation through my mind, and I thought, good. I do not recall saying any foul words in this conversation. I said, Brother Curry, I'm sorry. I don't understand. And so he said it again. He goes, did you hear what you said? So I start playing the conversation again. I'm thinking maybe I was gossiping about people. Maybe I should have been, I was telling something I shouldn't have told. You know, that kind of thing. And you're playing it all through your mind. I said again to him, I don't understand. And he said a third time, did you hear what you said? I mean, when you were up front and the preacher was asking you to make promises, did you hear what you said? Because I did, and I will hold you to it. That's over 40 years ago. And I can recall that conversation like it happened yesterday. Because here was a man who was saying, I didn't come just for the enjoyment of the wedding and Jerry's Fried Chicken. She was the one that did the reception. So those that remember Jerry's Fried Chicken from Florida College. I didn't come just for that. I came because I am a witness to the vow that you made, and I'm going to hold you to it. And I have loved him for that and appreciated him for being that straightforward and for that kind of candor at my wedding. Every wedding you attend, do you ever think about that? That's what you're there for. You are there to help hold accountable those who are making vows. That's our role as attendants at a wedding. We are witnesses to the vows. How important is that? We need to make sure that I understand this is not only before God, this is before mankind, and there's an integrity that I need to keep. Remember Jesus when he said, you got a problem with a brother, you go talk to the brother. That's a whole sermon in itself that we probably need on a regular basis, because we talk to everybody but the brother. But he says, you go talk to the brother. And if you can't solve it with the brother, what do you say to do? Take witnesses with you. Why in the world would you take witnesses? To establish the truth of the situation. What's said, what's not said. That's the whole purpose of witnesses, isn't it? Same way at your wedding. Somebody should hold other people accountable. I love the fact that at one point in time, in Russia, if you were the best man, if the couple didn't stay married a certain length of time, you had to pay a fine. That may make you rethink that question, wouldn't it? Will you be my best man? I don't know. How serious are you about the commitment you're about to make? Witnesses are a big factor in that idea. And so what did you promise and to whom? Like we said, it's for better or for worse, richer or poorer, in sickness and in health. None of that changes the promise. None of it ever changes the promise. Because there will be better and worse. We'll talk about that. And that doesn't mean marriages will have good and horrific times. Some marriages never go through horrific times, but if you get married, you've got, I'm telling you, if you're standing before a preacher and he's marrying you, and you think there aren't going to be struggles, you've got rocks in your head. You may have whatever's in your heart, it may be there, but you've got rocks in your head if you think it's just going to be smooth sailing for life. It isn't always smooth sailing. There are struggles. A lot of things bring struggles in. We bring baggage with us. There are a lot of issues. And so it's not going to always be perfect. There are times when finances are good, and there's time maybe when finances are bad. And you have to determine what you're going to do in that. And there are times sickness and health. We knew somebody in Tampa, and the husband left the family when the daughter was born, who was severely handicapped. Decided he wasn't going to deal. I mean, I can just imagine what's going through your mind right now. We would think awful things about somebody that does that, wouldn't we? You realize how many people leave because of health issues and other issues that they run through in marriage? He says, that's not the issue. The issue is, I made promises before God, and He takes that very seriously. In the book, The Meaning of Marriage, the statement is made, nobody marries the right person. You'll never marry the right person in the sense that you can find the person that will come without challenges. Not happening. Why? What's that? We're all human. We're all flawed, aren't we? Every one of us. Marriage is the union of two sinful people. Would you agree with that? And sinful people hurt each other. Sometimes intentionally. We may say something intentionally in marriage to aggravate the other person because we're upset or whatever. It's not even always accidentally. We wound each other in marriage. You're never going to marry the right person. We have a welcome video at Bulverde, where I am, that's on our website. And there's a statement made that I made in the welcome video because I heard a guy one time making a statement in a lesson he was presenting. I was listening on the radio. And he said, if you ever find the perfect church, he says, don't join it. You'll ruin it. I like that concept. And so in our welcome video, we tell people, if you're looking for the perfect church, don't come here. We're not it. We're flawed. We all have flaws. We have different backgrounds. We have other issues in life. We are saved by the grace of God, but we are still flawed people. That's the nature of a congregation of God's people, wouldn't you say? He says that's the nature of a wedding and a marriage as well. I need to make sure I understand. It's never going to be the right person that I marry. It's going to be determined on whether or not I'm the right kind of person that God has asked me to be. Because I've made promises. And so the issue is only a matter of, am I going to keep my promise or am I not going to keep my promise? Isn't that what it boils down to? Because that's the nature of vows. Am I going to keep my promise or am I not going to keep my promise? Imperfect people will always be challenged to live together in complete harmony. So what do you do about that? There's the challenge. What do you do about that? Because I assumed I'd be loved 100% in return. But that was never a part of the deal that I made. I promised. So what do I do in that respect? Why is that so important? God makes marriage a covenant, which is what He says in the book of Malachi and other places as well. But He talks about the wife, the covenant wife of your youth. Because they were putting their wives away, weren't they? He says the covenant wife. So He draws attention first to, this is somebody you made a lifelong promise to. Understand that first. Because if you're putting her away, you're breaking a promise first, to begin with. Understand the seriousness of that. And so, why did He picture it as a covenant, do you think? You ever think about that? Why did He pick that model to say, this is what marriage is? What's that? Absolutely. Because God wants us to understand that our marriage is a picture of His relationship with us. Would you agree with that? And that's one of the things that makes it so absolutely critical. Because I can tell you, every single thing that my sons, and I'm saying my because I'm using me as the example in this occasion, every single thing that my sons understand about their heavenly Father as they are being raised, everything that they understand about their heavenly Father will be filtered first through what they see in their earthly father. And so they're going to understand things about a relationship of father and son based on what they see in my relationship with them. Now, they can overcome that if I set the bad example. I believe that. But I think it's filtered through me first. Does that make sense? Just nod your heads. Either way is okay, but just nod your head one way or the other so I know. Yeah, it makes sense. They're going to filter it through what they see in me. How critical is that? Because I am absolutely determined to make my marriage last as long as we both live. There's no question about that. But it's not because it'll make me happier. Although I think it will. I think my godly marriage, if I live the way God wants me to, and my wife's living the way God, I will understand the ultimate bliss in a relationship on earth. It'll make me happier, but that's not the reason. It's not because I want my kids to have a secure home, even though that they've left, but to have a secure home that they could even come back to if they needed to. Although, I desire that as well. It's not because it would tear me apart to see Judy have to start over again, though it would. That's not the reason. The reason is because it's a picture of my relationship with God. And the world is going to judge my God based on how I live my life. Would you agree with that? That's not always a fair judgment. I understand that. But that's where it's filtered through, isn't it? David, on one occasion, and I'm assuming no buzzers or bells have gone off yet, have they? Okay. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't not hearing. David was a man after God's own heart. Does that phrase itself ever challenge you? I have a lesson where I talk about, what do you want on your tombstone? Not your pizza, for the people who remember those old commercials. But you ever think about, what if God was going to write on your tombstone for you? He was going to put the epitaph there. And he said, Mark Broyles, a friend of God, like he said of Abraham. Would you be okay with that? Not if he put that on mine, if he put that on yours. If that's all that's said on mine and God was the one that penned it, I'd be thrilled. You know, what if he said something like, none other born of woman greater? Oh, I'd be good with that. What if he said, a man after God's own heart? I'd be thrilled with that. But all those people had flaws, didn't they? David had incredible flaws and mistakes on occasion, didn't he? He sees Bathsheba, and let's give him the absolute benefit of the doubt. Some people have said he shouldn't have looked her way. Well, I don't know that the scriptures say that. He was up on the roof. He saw a woman bathing, it said. Every man understands the implication of that statement, I would tell you that. Every man understands that, because we're visual people, and that's the way God created us. But he sees a woman bathing. That wasn't necessarily the issue. The issue was he kept looking, wasn't it? He gazed upon her. He kept looking. And then he inquired about her. And they said, surely this is Uriah's wife. And David said, hands off. I want nothing to do with that. Is that what he said? He said, send her to me. This is Uriah's. Send her to me anyway. And he does. And he ends up having illicit relationships with her. And she gets pregnant. And he conspires and has her husband brought home, hoping that he can hide the whole thing because her husband will come home and they'll be together intimately and everybody will think that it's his baby. The husband won't even come in to his wife because his soldiers are still at war. And so David's plan is thwarted. So he sends him back into battle and does what? Has him killed. This is heinous behavior. Isn't it? And so Nathan the prophet comes and tells David a story. Great story, isn't it? He goes, let me tell you this story about this guy who had everything in the world. Had flocks, so many you couldn't even count his flocks. And what did he do? He wanted a lamb and he went and stole the only lamb that this other man had and took it to himself. And David, man, he's getting angry. As the story's being told, David's getting angry. And he understands this man deserves death. David didn't get death, but the son did. God says the son's going to die. And the reason for that was what? Because you committed adultery with Bathsheba? No, that's not what he said. Because you had her husband killed? No, that's not what he said. Why did Nathan tell him the son was going to die? Do you remember? He said, you have given occasion to the enemies of God to blaspheme him. You're the king of God's people, and this is your behavior. What are they going to say about your God? That's an incredible thought to think about. People are looking at how well we're keeping our promises on all fronts, but on our marriages. And I can tell you that I am a Christian not only because of what I was taught, but equally as much because of what I saw. As I saw a husband and a wife living in a godly fashion with children in a godly fashion, and I saw that day in it, which was not my family. This is another family. My best friend in the world and his family. As I watched their family, I said, whatever causes that is what I want in my life. Their promises and lives were a testimony to God in their life. A good one. Ours is always a testimony to God, whether good or bad. God says it's a promise. It's a covenant. Lawfully wedded. Accountable before God. Integrity before men. Thank you so much for your attention this morning.